nomadic, savage family I came from. You know, among the Plains Indian, when there were disagreements, it was usually settled without the spilling of much blood, and this is true of indigenous people around the world. Because of the clan system, we have immediate conflict resolution. Find out about the clan system of any indigenous peoples around the world, and you're going to find out that they have a built-in conflict resolution. Built-in conflict resolution then means, of course, you don't have to resort to violence to settle disputes. Now, we live imperfect human beings. We had our young people who were rambunctious, daring, foolish. They went out, made mistakes. Just like every society. And those mistakes were acknowledged and attempted to take care of. But the most honorable thing we could do when we met an adversary was to touch him. Just touch him and return back. In the Southeast, they had a ball game similar to soccer. And when two nations or two villages couldn't come to an agreement, they'd have a soccer game. Of course, it was very, very rough. Not unlike professional football. And people broke bones and got some lumps. Broken bones, maybe. So they settle their differences. The Maori, I just love it. I went over to the Maori in New Zealand. And the English, you know, which settled New Zealand, it's called Aotearoa. But they have this image of the Maori people as these fierce people, because the Maoris tattoo their faces for spiritual reasons, certain ones of them, and especially the women. Well, that made them look scary, like a Halloween mask. And to this day, the Maori, and they have these drums, and then they have these masks. Boy, that looks scary. So they must be savage, you know? When they had disagreements among themselves, one of the things they did was make faces at one another. And the ones that made the ugliest faces won. I kid you not. And the biggest insult, they didn't flip you off. They mooned you. Yeah. So on the 500th anniversary of, or the 200th anniversary of the Treaty of Waitangi, one of the patriots of the Maori people mooned the queen. And of course, he's thrown in jail for mooning the queen. But this is how, these are just light examples of how indigenous people around the world went about settling their differences without the spilling of much blood, if any. So we indigenous peoples, you know, we've got the wrong. It's a lie. What you've all learned about, it's a lie. We're among the cleanest people on earth. And the grave-robbing society, who call themselves archaeologists, they can ascertain to that. If you throttle them a little bit and force the truth out of them. And it's very gratifying to come from a peaceful, you know, because I picked up the gun in the 1970s and I traveled around trying to convince my people to pick up a gun. I said, it's better to die free. I picked up all the revolutionary slogans. It's better to die free than a slave. And the white man only understands violence. That's all he understands, violence. So let's get the gun and let's kill. Let's do like he does, just kill indiscriminately. In South Dakota, where they still hunt us. Let's just drive along and we see these ranchers out on our land working their cattle and on their fences. Let's just stop and blow them away. That's what I was saying in the early 70s. Let's take out some judges. My people wouldn't respond. Went all over this country, man. I went to the Everglades. Went to the Crows. went all over. Down in Miccosukee, in the Everglades, in those Chickies, homes without walls, I begin to have my awakening. They begin to teach me, and I begin to see how much they loved life. And life was so beautiful, they understood it. And that life worked for them, not against them. And they understood the concept of immortality. The indigenous peoples of the world, we understand immortality. We understand there is no death. There's only a change of worlds. And I saw these Miccosukee people, commonly referred to as Seminoles, who were driven into the Everglades. How they just loved life. And to talk to them about picking up the gun was just utterly ridiculous. And yet, they're the nation that militarily defeated the United States of America. You know? Just like my nation, the Lakota. Of course, you all know that, right? You learned that in your high school history books. And it resulted in the 1868 Fort Laramie Treaty. Be that as it may, I came home. And my uncle sat me down, Matthew King. And he said, I want to tell you something, nephew. He said, I want to tell you that the white man is like a child. And you have to have a lot of patience. That's all he said. I thought about that. I gave it a lot of thought. And I put down the gun. And I begin to understand what life is all about. I begin to really start to listen to my elders. And I understand a little bit more about flies, mosquitoes, bees, cockroaches, gnats, fleas, snakes. Clear understanding. Spiders. I love spiders. My people have a deep respect for spiders. We never kill them. You shouldn't either. Shouldn't kill anything. Set it free. So I started back in the movement. One thing in the American Indian movement, though, is we refuse to turn the other cheek. We also refuse to bend over and get the other two kicked. We are staunch believers in the art of self-defense, survival. And like any natural animal, when we're cornered, we will fight and struggle for our survival by any means necessary. But the Eurocentric male is not a dummy. He doesn't want to relinquish power. He never will relinquish power. So he is no longer going to try to change us into two-bit facsimiles of himself. He will allow us to be part-time Indians. What you see at these powwows now, caricatures of what we once were. He will allow us to be part-time Indians. And he will allow you to be part-time Democrats and part-time Republicans. Part-time feminists. Part-time youth. He He will allow you. And he will never relinquish his power. He's building more prisons, making more laws, doling out the band-aids. He's doling out the band-aids. All of a sudden, you had this past summer a bunch of drive-by shootings. Let's fix it. We're going to put those youth, longer prison sentence, percentages, harsher prison terms. And we're going to build more prisons, put more beds, and build more prison cells. That was the response of your legislature. My God! I've been trying to tell you all that the United States of America is becoming one huge Indian reservation, and it already has. And the statistics will bear me out, yeah? Let's go into your history. You know, I don't mind telling you about me. I really don't. But I'm getting sick and tired of having to tell you about your own history. But let's go back into your history and how the Constitution came about. It came from us, by the way, the Iroquois Confederacy specifically. Some of you, if not all of you, may know that. They're sophisticated enough. But that's a long story in itself. I want to get to the point. We gave you the idea of individual freedom through representative government. Until that time, the Greeks, nobody. John Locke, nobody. Adam Smith, nobody knew about the freedom of the individual through representative government until we taught you all. All right, the Constitution come from us. It's already been acknowledged, it's a fact. But the Constitution has been ripped to shreds. Number one, the IRS. Does it have to pay attention to your rights under the Constitution? The DEA, the FBI, all the alphabet. The alphabet of government. They don't have to pay attention to your rights. And now you're going around screaming, or the politicians are leading it. I can't believe you believe them. Tell me, I mean, how many times you got to get hit on the head? I used to think my people were colonized on an Indian reservation, you know? And then I have to listen to the blatherings of a politician on TV. Your entire news media has been taken over by the government. Don't you realize the only people they interview are government and ex-government officials? That's a totalitarian state. That's Orwellian to the max. I mean, I can't watch the news. CNN's the worst. I can't watch the news because I know some government hack or ex-hack. Actually, they never become ex. Some government hack is going to get on there and give his expert opinion. It's amazing. The propaganda in this country, and you buy it, Mogadishu, you know. I'm going to force you to eat the food I bring you. And I'm going to take a gun along and do it. And those Africans say, no, you ain't. Buddy, get out. Boom, boom, boom. More Americans die. What's the Eurocentric male response? Send more guns. Send more soldiers. Remember Clinton's promises? And here's a clown. Your new hope, the new guru, the Messiah of America. I mean, I saw the inauguration poopa, you know? Show business comes out and it's orchestrated, all the beautiful songs, fireworks, and y'all love Clinton. Well, I'm doing a lot of work in Hollywood and they're all pro-Clinton. Woo! And the first thing he does, he appoints Benson. That's his first act as president, appoints Benson, the man responsible for the SNL ripoff. They ripped you off, and you're going to be paying it till you're dead, and your children are going to pay it till they're dead, and then their children are going to pay it till they're dead. And that's Clinton, your savior. Wow. You know, the country is broke, you know that. The system has totally and is falling apart. And you've got Mother Earth to worry about. And guess who wants to become just like the United States? I'm not talking about Japan or Korea or India or England or Mexico or Canada. China, man! China wants to use as much oil as the United States does per capita. They want to create as much trash as the United States does per capita. You think Mother Earth's going to hang on? You don't think the other strains of the hantavirus is going to come back? You poison, you continue, Chief Seattle said this, you continue to contaminate your bed, and one night you will suffocate in your own waste. Voila, AIDS, hantavirus, they're chopping down the rainforest, and all of a sudden these new viruses are coming out, causing all kinds of disease, new diseases. And then the summer's flood, remember that? All the Eurocentric male power. Down the tubes when that river said, hey, I want to expand this morning. It's getting... man. What's this, a dam over here? A levee over here? A city right there? And old Mother is stretched, boy. The human being all of a sudden. So what are they doing? Building more levees. And I do think we have to become responsible. Otherwise it's going to be too late pretty soon, you know. As you can see, Marxism has melded in with capitalism. And your children are not going to enjoy the fruits. I just read where Lilly is now laying off 2,000 more, you know? You ever get tired of that? And then the government tells you the unemployment rate's going down? He comes up with these statistics. Of course, they don't count the Indians on the reservation and those that are not drawing unemployment benefits. You know, all the homeless aren't counted. They say, but the unemployment rate's going down. Meanwhile, all the corporations are restructuring. And they want you to buy NAFTA. Well, I'm glad I'm an Indian. I've got a home, you know? And I'm going home. I'm going home, man. Because I have a way of life. I have a way of life that is nonviolent, in balance, and it doesn't want to make me become a tourist. Yeah? Think about it. Think about it. And I really weep inside when I see Indians out nowadays with the cameras out because I know they're not Indians anymore. They've become tourists, you know? So they've lost that sense of peace of mind that my elders have. It's always amazed me, my elders. They never wanted to travel, man. You know? Perfectly satisfied to be at home. When I moved to Cleveland, Ohio in 1968, went on relocation, courtesy of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, I got to choose Cleveland. So the Bureau of Indian Affairs relocated me to Cleveland. And I returned home the next summer and went to the Sundance, and I was singing around the drum. And I told them I had arrived in Cleveland the previous July on the day the Cuyahoga River, a major river that floods into Lake Erie, caught on fire. Cuyahoga River caught on fire. I went down and saw it because it was right near the federal building. And I watched them spraying water on the fire and water. You know? At any rate, I thought that was novel. I went home and I was sitting around that drum and I told them that the river caught on fire. Nobody believed me sitting around the drum. Water doesn't catch on fire. So I explained to them about pollution. And across from the drum from me was this older man, gnarled hands of a lifetime of work. He had on what we call Sally clothes. That's Salvation Army clothes. But we say we got it from Sally's department store. Kind of upgrade your feeling there, uplift your clothes. So he had some Sally clothes. And he had to put it down his head, and in my language, you know, and he said, "Well, the poor white man. The poor white man." And I looked at him. Now I was 29 years old. And I said, "Wait a minute. Here's this man who's never been anywhere in his life, destitute practically, poor beyond his life, worked hard all his life, and he feels sorry for his oppressor?" I got up from the drum. I went for a walk on that one. And I start thinking, you know, where's he coming from? Where's he coming from? And the more I thought about it, and the more I think about it, he's right. Now understand something. I understand the sacred colors of life. And the primary sacred colors of the Lakota is black, red, yellow, and white. Represent the four quarters of the universe, the four winds, the four races of the human being. The four ages of the human being. The four ages of the earth. Black, red, yellow, and white. Mix those four colors together, you get the color brown. The color of our sacred grandmother, the earth, and the other race of people. And you cannot go through life without acknowledging those sacred colors. And when you do acknowledge those sacred colors, then you will come to understand a little bit more about the female-male balance. And once you understand how to cope with and live with the female-male balance, you're going to find a path to conflict resolution. You're going to find a home. A home! A home. And that's what Americans need. They need a home. And not fed to you by the government. You need a home. Mother Earth. Then you will really understand nonviolence. And respect for our relatives' visions. Think about that statement. Respect for your relatives' visions. If you have respect for the vision of a bird, if you have respect for the vision of a worm, you have respect for all the sacred colors. And then you'll start getting rid of your potted plants, man. The hardest thing for industrialized society is to free your plants in your home. Try it. Let them free off of that reservation. Replant them into the sacred mother of the earth. And if they die, never fret, because they return to grandmother of the earth, which brings forth their descendants. They understand eternity. Your plants. Go home. Let your plants go, man. Because like Steve Seattle said, in part, and I close with this, said it to the President of the United States, tribe follows tribe and nation follows nation. It's like the waves of the sea. It's the order of nature. And regret is useless. Your time of decay may be distant, but it will surely come. For even the white man's God, who walked and talked with him as friend with friend, could not escape our common destiny. We may be brothers after all. We shall see. Thank you.
That was Russell Means, Knowing Who You Are, Lessons from Native America. This classic from the AR Archives was recorded in Boulder, Colorado in 1993. Russell Means, an Oglala Lakota and a prominent voice in the struggle for indigenous rights, was the first national director of the American Indian Movement. Russell Means died on October 22, 2012. This program is produced by Alternative Radio, an unembedded award-winning weekly series based in Boulder, Colorado. Since we began broadcasting in 1986, AR is independent. That's why we can do programs such as the one you just heard, or others with Michelle Alexander, Paul Cienfuegos, Winona LaDuke, Arundhati Roy, Medea Benjamin, and Noam Chomsky. We also have another Russell Means program called For the World to Live, Columbus Must Die. To access our complete audio and book catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. To place a credit card order for a CD, MP3, or written transcript of the program you just heard, Russell Means, Knowing Who You Are, Lessons from Native America, call us toll-free at 1-800-444-1977. Again, that toll-free number is 1-800-444-1977. Or you can order on our secure website, alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org. Series theme music is performed by the Kronos Quartet from Pieces of Africa. Joe Ritchie is our editor. I'm David Barsamian. Thank you for listening.
This is Jesse Brown, the host of Canada Land, Canada's only media criticism program. Every week I talk to some of the most interesting people in the country about some of the things that matter most. We talk about the news media, about comedy, film, music, and politics. And you can now listen on CJSF 90.1 FM every Monday at 5 p.m. Wait for it.
Am I gonna lose it all? Couldn't talk to you, couldn't face the world, couldn't bear enough. I am broken down, I'm weary, I'm exhausted, I feel emptiness, I'm not present, I'm a ghost of all my woes. I'm a figment of a psyche, I'm stuck in all those moments. I see nowhere, I see never more or less. I don't know if I'm enough in this senseless everyday repetition of a very own death. All these voices in my head, I'm collapsing by the bathroom mirror, fragmenting every sense of myself. And I realize I could have seen me I am, in all its rawness, and this restlessness in everything, the darkness in pulling strings, the mechanistic tendency of self-defeat. And I don't know what it could be, the thing ahead of every intention, the perversions of our will to live. And I don't know. And I don't know.